We tend to think of a binary outcome in criminal cases, guilty or not guilty, but there are more options than that. Oregon's repertoire in criminal case outcomes includes a finding of guilty except for insanity, often abbreviated GEI. It means, yes, the person committed the crime, but she or he was insane at the time. The sentence and disposition of the case are different from straight guilty findings, so it is possible for people to be released from custody and commit more crimes. It has happened. Such cases are the focus of work by the journalism nonprofit ProPublica in partnership with Oregon's Malheur Enterprise, and Jamie Fraser is the reporter doing the work. She's our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Jamie, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jeff.
I notice you work in several parts of the country. Talk about what got this partnership going and what brought you to Oregon.
Well, I had worked briefly with Les at the Oregonian years ago.
Les Zeitz is the publisher of the Malheur Enterprise, right? Owner.
Yeah, Les is the owner and publisher of the Malheur Enterprise. Now he had been an investigative reporter at the Oregonian for almost 40 years before that, and this is theoretically his retirement project. But he's doing as much work as he ever did before, it seems like.
Right.
But he was looking for a reporter to join his team and apply with him for the support from ProPublica to do the project. And I was interested, so we applied, and then ProPublica decided we would be one of seven local newsrooms they supported this year.
So was the decision for what you would cover made prior to the ProPublica partnership forming, or did you have to include that as part of the request for partnership?
That was part of the request. So the application project process is that you pitch a particular project saying, this is the reporting we would like to do. If you could give us the financial and technical support to dedicate the time to it for a year. And so they knew exactly what they were getting into from the start. And luckily, we were one of the stronger applications.
So the issue of general use of Oregon's guilty except for insanity law, is it used fairly often or is it a seldom kind of thing?
So Oregon tends to use it more than most other states. And part of that is because Oregon has a focus on reintegrating people pretty quickly. In many states, if you are found guilty except for insanity, you might stay in the state hospital and never be able to get out effectively. But Oregon has a system that's designed to transition people out of a secure state hospital setting into progressively less supervised community treatment programs with the goal of ultimately having people stable enough to live independently again. This Psychiatric Security Review Board is the state agency that oversees those folks, and they currently have about 500 people under their supervision, and they get about 50 or 60 new people every year and discharge about the same number every year. So it's pretty common in Oregon.
And it sounds like the burden of proof then in deciding whether to release someone is upon the people who don't think there should be a release, that the general approach is that, you know, if everything is lining up, this person should be released.
Well, the law requires the board to release people if they reach certain findings. So if they decide that the person is no longer affected by a mental illness, then the law requires them to release that person. If they find the person still has a mental illness, but that they are no longer a danger to the public, they are required to release that person. And then there is a cap in the law that says you cannot hold someone under an insanity conviction. Well, it's not really a conviction. It's really a not guilty finding. But you can't hold someone longer than they would have served for that crime. So there are people who are released because essentially the time's up. And then there have been a few cases where the law has changed either because of the legislature or the Supreme Court, and they don't fit the definition of legal insanity anymore, so they also have to release them. So there is a little bit of discretion there in deciding whether or not someone has a mental illness, whether or not they are still a danger. But once they make either of those decisions, the law requires them to release someone.
And Jamie, is there any crossover if you're in the mental health system because you got the GEI verdict? At any point, are you to go to prison, or is that not part of the issue at all?
No. So you only go to prison if you are found guilty. Technically guilty, except for insanity, is a type of not guilty finding. But rather than you, you know, going back to your normal life, it's kind of an intermediary step where the state reserves the right to divert you into treatment. And so you don't go to prison. Most people start at the state hospital, and then as they are stabilized and show progress in their treatment, they are scaled down into less restrictive programs.
Jamie Fraser, a guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an investigative reporter working on a project with the Malheur Enterprise and ProPublica on the guilty except for insanity verdict in Oregon and what happens to people who are sentenced under that system. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join the conversation by phone. Send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So a couple of notable stories you brought up here. Charles Longjaw, what had he done to be locked up in the first place?
So in 1986, Charles Longjaw was 18 years old, and he murdered one man and attempted to murder another within a few days of each other. And some doctors concluded at the time that he was psychotic at the time of the attacks. They couldn't quite tell if it was because he had schizophrenia or if it was caused by his heavy drug use. One suggested he might have permanent brain damage that played a factor in the attack. But ultimately, one doctor hired by the prosecution said there's, you know, he has some minor issues, but nothing prevalent enough that he should not go to prison for these crimes. The judge ultimately sided with the other doctors and said, yes, he was insane at the time of the attack. And so he was placed under the jurisdiction of the state.
So there were warnings, as I understand it, from a state psychologist that Longjaw would likely reoffend if he were released. But what does the Psychiatric Security Review Board, PSRB, get to do with that information?
So they don't get to act on danger alone. They have to consider whether someone is mentally ill primarily, and the law requires them to release someone if they think they're not mentally ill anymore, or more specifically, if they're not insane, which is a legal definition. And in Longjaw's case, doctors ultimately concluded that his psychotic episodes were the result of drug use. And in 2005, the Oregon Supreme Court said, oh, that's not what legislators intended. That's not actually insane. And so the Psychiatric Security Review Board, when it reviewed Longjaw's case in 2016, no, it was 2015. I'm mixing up him and Montmuller. They decided they couldn't hold him anymore because he didn't have a diagnosis that qualified.
So he was released, and again, his charges were murder and attempted murder originally back in 1986. So he's released in 2015, and by 2016, he has apparently committed another murder in Portland.
Yep, that's right.
Has the law itself, Jamie, changed since it went on the books? I mean, you mentioned the Supreme Court decision, which it sounds like a change of the disposition of, but has there been legislative change to the law?
There has been a few legislative changes. They weren't as big of factors in the Longjaw case. In the 80s, the law was amended to exclude psychosis and personality, particular psychosis from personality disorders. So if you don't have another mental illness, but you only have antisocial personality disorder, you no longer qualify. So there have been some folks that were released as a result of that legislative change.
I mean, in Longjaw's case in particular, I was kind of riveted on the idea that he certainly had a propensity to abuse substances. This was a clear part of his pattern in the past. But that did not count as a mental illness, apparently, and did not rise to the level of making him dangerous.
I think the doctors clearly showed that he was dangerous, but the law about whether Oregon can maintain custody of someone doesn't hinge on whether they're dangerous. It hinges on whether they fit the definition of legal insanity. And there are, you know, mental health conditions and mental illnesses that do not fall under the definition of legal insanity. And substance use disorders were one of those that the Supreme Court removed from that definition.
Jamie Fraser, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an investigative reporter working with the Malheur Enterprise and the nonprofit ProPublica on a series of stories about Oregon's Guilty Except for Insanity, or GEI, verdict, which has resulted in some people who were deemed to be potentially dangerous released from state custody, and then they reoffended. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Anthony Montwheeler, you mentioned his name a moment ago, was released a month after Longjaw was arrested for the stabbing in Portland. Was there any indication that the Psychiatric Security Review Board took Longjaw's case into account when deciding what to do with Montwheeler, and for that matter, could they?
No indication, and I don't know if they could, because the law is pretty clear that if you make a finding of someone not being mentally ill, as they did in Montwheeler's case, they have to release them.
So you did try to interview members of the PSRB, the Psychiatric Security Review Board. How'd that go for you, Jamie?
I made multiple requests, both in person after board meetings and after a board meeting and by email, as well as a couple phone messages, and they declined to speak with me, but did ultimately respond to some written questions.
There were a lot of questions that said we can't speculate on what might have happened. I noticed that in their responses.
Yeah. The responses that they gave in written form were pretty
dry,
sounded
shall
a little
we say?
Legal easy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So how about legislators? Have you talked to any legislators, anybody who think Oregon law should be changed?
Not yet. Right now, I'm really focusing on the next questions for this project, which are how often does this happen? And then once we have that, the question is why? And then from there, what should change? And that's kind of the part where the legislators, get put on the hot seat.
Sure. So what are the indications then? I mean, these are obviously cases that would make headlines. Charles Longjaw and Anthony Montwheeler have made headlines. But are they the exceptions rather than the rule, or are there many more of them potentially?
Well, we're trying to figure that out for the first time because Oregon doesn't track what happens to these people. The state can tell you a certain percentage of people released from prison will commit a new crime. It's the recidivism rate, that Oregon doesn't keep a similar accounting of what happens to people released from this insanity system. And so we are going through 10 years of discharge orders from the Psychiatric Security Review Board to count that for the first time, see how many people have committed crimes after release and how severe they were.
So, Jamie, is there any support system? And when you're let out of prison, you go on parole, so you have to check in with somebody. Is there anything comparable to that in the GEI release?
No. When you're discharged, you are free. You have no supervision. There's no more state support in terms of housing or assistance unless you apply for it. And the state hospital and community programs are supposed to help you with that transition. They're supposed to write a discharge plan and help you figure out where you're going to live, if you're going to apply for food stamps, that kind of thing, how to get a job. But, I don't have a clear picture of how often that happens or how robust that system is. And really, they have no way to enforce it. Once someone is free, they can choose to do what they want.
Well, here's a call from Leslie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Jamie Fraser, a reporter investigating Oregon's GEI, Guilty Except for Insanity verdict. Go ahead, Leslie.
Hi. Back in 2005, Dr. Bruce Rowan killed his wife in Port Angeles, and they were our very dear friends. And he was let off because of insanity. And after he was released, we were the only conduit between between Bruce and the victim's family, Debbie. So it is true, once they get released, it's very difficult to keep track. And I know Bruce actually committed suicide last year. So it was a sad story all around.
Wow. Okay. Thanks for sharing that, Leslie. Appreciate that. Different law in Washington, which I know you haven't looked at. But The level of what has happened with the GEI cases you cite, Jamie Fraser, sound familiar. You know, psychiatric patients who do well under relatively close supervision and no longer show signs of mental illness. Is that the essence of what people were seeing with Longjaw and Montwheeler while they were in custody?
So I'd like to touch a little bit on what Leslie said for a minute. And,
sure.
You know, that ended up with suicide. And that's something that we've talked about trying to explore, too, that, you know, how often are people being released and then they die either because they killed themselves or they end up without housing and are homeless and are exposed to those kinds of elements and die. So is that really the kind of outcome we're looking for? So that's an interesting story, and I appreciate her sharing that. But to your question, could you remind me what it was?
The essence of the fact that people can do really well under close supervision in psychiatric settings, but when the supervision is no longer there, they can revert, stop taking their meds, do any one of a number of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the Oregon system is designed to try to figure out how, you know, what's the minimum of supervision needed for someone to be stable so that you're not spending an inordinate amount of state money on a high level of supervision for someone that would do well with a low level of supervision. And then also, you know, there's civil rights issues at play, too, in terms of people's freedom. But in Longjaw's case, you know, we saw throughout a number of the PSRB reports that he did very well under strict supervision. You know, he earned the praise of his treatment teams. He was seen as helpful and a friendly fellow when he wasn't using drugs. So, you know, that's not entirely uncommon.
All right. More reporting yet to come, as you pointed out, but some really good stuff has come in already to help us understand better what goes on in Oregon's guilty except for insanity verdict in criminal cases. The cases that Jamie's written about so far, Anthony Montwheeler and Charles Longjaw. And you can find more of it linked through our website at jeffexchange.org. Jamie, thanks so much for joining us today.